You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is Radio Cycling.
It's almost time for Paris-Roubaix, the race that every kid dreams of winning, but that half the pro peloton hate. It's a race of fairy tales and nightmares, a 260-kilometre odyssey across cracked cobbles and treacherous mud, an iconic event where dreams are fulfilled, legends born, and sometimes careers broken.
Cancellara qui est juste derrière. Est-ce que Cancellara va avoir la force de remonter? Van Mark qui y va. Cancellara passe de l'autre côté. Cancellara va gagner. Oui, victoire. Et victoire de Cancellara devant Van Mark. Il a été parfait.
Had to be Langeveld unless he feels he can trust his sprint. Just a few hundred meters between eternal greatness and these riders.
Now, after last weekend's chaos on the Koppenberg in the Tour of Flanders, what lies in wait in the hell of the north? For many riders, it's a big season goal, but for others, it's a race so fraught with risk that it's one to avoid. My name's Jeremy Christopher Whittle. Today on Radio Cycling, are the cruel cobbles of the Arenberg still a risk worth taking?
The CPA has requested to put a few corners before Arenberg just to slow down the speed. So it'll make the race, I think, more exciting. It'll be much more harder.
Also on the show, one cycling in limbo, have the Saudis really run out of road?
Enthusiasm seems to have tapered off quite significantly in the last few weeks. People I've been speaking with in the last few days have said that conversations are still happening, but it seems to have stalled.
Fear and loathing, is Israel Premier Tech's presence posing a risk to the peloton?
What are you suggesting? That people are going to attack us because we're wearing the name Israel on our jersey? Are you suggesting that, you know, we don't have the right to free speech and to present ourselves in public?
Join me on the podcast today is Christopher Peter Cossins and Christopher Marshall Bell. Say hello, Christophers.
Hello. Hello, Jeremy. Christopher. And Christopher.
I mean, there's far too many Christophers on this podcast. No one wants this. No one wants this.
There's too many Christophers and too many Wills. So it's almost that time of the season again, Paris-Roubaix weekend. First up on Saturday is the fourth edition of the women's race, where among the favourites is Team SD Works world champion Lotte Kopecky and also Visma-Lisa Bikes' Marianne Vos. Can the Dutch champion finally claim the one race missing from her palmares? In the men's race on Sunday, Mathieu van der Poel, winner of Flanders for a third time last weekend, is eyeing the Flanders-Roubaix double. Try saying that quickly. Can anyone stop him, though? Both races are missing some big names, with a series of recent crashes sidelining star players such as Wout van Aert and Lizzie Denyen. And once again, safety is a big issue, even more so after last weekend's mudfest in the Tour of Flanders, which reduced the Koppenberg climb to a cyclocross race. For many influential figures in the World Tour, seeing the best riders jogging up the Koppenberg, bikes hoisted over their shoulders, was not a good look. Just ask Adam Hansen, head of the CPA, the Professional Riders Association.
The conditions on the Koppenberg was not ideal. I don't know if if the fans really want to see these things. But, you know, bike racing should be bike racing. You should be able to ride your bike. Now, to say one or two riders were able to do it and the rest couldn't, okay, they are, let's say, higher, better skilled, and this is more for cyclocross. But we would like to hope that the majority of the cyclists can ride the course without walking, so it's not ideal.
But then at least the Koppenberg is uphill. And if you thought that was dangerous, imagine the potential for disaster of a speeding peloton hitting the monstrous Arenberg cobbles in Paris-Roubaix in similar conditions at 60 kilometres an hour. Here's Hansen again.
We've discussed with SAFER, the CPA has requested to put a few corners before Arenberg just to slow down the speed. So it'll make the race, I think, more exciting. It'll be much more harder in that sense because I'll be starting Arenberg at a slower speed. So this would be good, I guess, from a spectator point of view, because Arenberg is one of the hardest sectors. And now with the slower speed in, it's going to be much harder for the cyclists. So it's going to be interesting to watch. But it's going to be a lot safer. So this is a bit of a win from the CPA's point of view. The riders have requested this. They've actually, it was their idea. They've come to me and I've spoken to ASO, and it was just announced today that they've agreed that they would do this. This is wonderful.
So a welcome collaboration between the CPA and race promoters ASO has eased some of the pressure on the peloton on the approach to Arenberg. There will now be bends, a chicane of sorts, to slow the speed. But on the other hand, isn't risk a huge part of the character, the very essence of this legendary race?
I think things are getting maybe a little out of control. I understand, you know, Paris-Roubaix is Paris-Roubaix and Strade Bianche is Strade Bianche. And it just seems that to keep the beauty of Paris-Roubaix and to keep the beauty of Flanders and Strade and these type of races, I think the other races should not adopt these let's say specialty sections that these races have. I think the other races can just be as they are, well liked by the fans, and leave these, let's say, the special courses to for those races, because you have special riders that target these courses. I understand the Tour de France, you know, every, you know, second year add something interesting, but to always have it, I don't know, I think it takes the beauty away from Paris-Roubaix. And if you have too many cobble sections in every single Grand Tour and, you know, every single other stage race, it's kind of steals it away from Paris-Roubaix. So I think there should be a difference.
That's Adam Hansen there. But maybe a part of this is also about audience expectations. And by audience, I mean us. Everybody, apart from the riders, wants to see the peloton racing through Arenberg. Everybody, again apart from the riders, prefers a wet Paris-Roubaix to a dry one. The racing is more brutal, the spectacle greater, the TV audience bigger. So the challenge now is finding the right balance between spectacle and safety. Now, Pete, you've got an intriguing take on this tweaking of the Roubaix route.
Yeah, I have, Jeremy. We all love Paris-Roubaix because it's such an anachronism in modern cycling. It's a throwback to a former era, just like Strade Bianche is. One thing that struck me, it's also become an anachronism because it's now one of the few races on the calendar where a lot of the route, i.e. the cobbles, the 56, 57 kilometres of cobbles, aren't full of road furniture and never will be. I mean, it's interesting to note that they're one of the few sections of road anywhere where the needs of road racing cyclists are prioritised. They're essentially there for racing. It's a bit of an odd take, maybe, but then again, Roubaix is a bit of an odd race.
It's a fair point, though. Chris, you're going to be reporting from Roubaix for the first time. What do you expect to be witnessing this weekend?
Lots of drunken people by the side of the road. It looks like it's going to rain on Thursday and Friday, perhaps Saturday as well. So even though it's not forecast to rain on Sunday, it looks like we could have some pretty treacherous cobbles. And as we know from all of the other tens and dozens of editions that's came before this, wet cobbles makes for a very different race. And as Gianni Moscon found out, I think in 2021 it was, you can have a lead, but one slip and ciao. You're gone. Your race is over. One thing I really love about Roubaix is that it's that one race in the calendar where the underdogs, I guess they're not always likely to win, but they always seem to have more of a chance of winning than any other race. I mean, just this century alone, we've had the likes of Matt Heyman, Alison Jackson, and famously in 2011, Johan van Sumeren winning as well, who basically had a flat tyre. And it's very, very few races in which you see this happening. I actually have two outside tips for this weekend in the men's race, and they're both at very opposite ends of their career. You've got Alexander Kristoff, age 36. He's never won Roubaix. He's won plenty of other classics and semi-classics. He's always in the leading bunch, always in the front group. And at the other end, age just 20, is Visma Lisa Bikes Per Strande Hagens. When we had Richard Plugger on the podcast a few months ago, he actually said that Per Strande, who was Norwegian, was going to be Wout van Aert's replacement, his successor. Van Aert's not there. What happens if Per Strande goes into a break? And how often have we seen a break stick in Roubaix? Two outside chances.
Pete's puzzle. Okay, it's that time again. Pete, hit us with your puzzle stick.
It is, of course, Roubaix themed. The 1964 edition of Paris-Roubaix had the lowest amount of cobbles in the race's history. But how many kilometres of pavé were there?
Now, 64, was that when Pieter Post won?
It was. He was the first ever Dutch winner of the race. Very good, Jeremy. The fastest race ever at that point.
Yeah, that's my next thing I was going to say. Fastest race ever at that point. So if it's the fastest ever, I'm assuming it was quite a minimal number of cobbles and a lot of good flat road and a tailwind. So how many kilometres of pavé were there? 43.
Chris?
I'm going to go even less than that. I'm going to go with a really bad number of 20. 20 kilometres of cobbles.
20.
It was light on cobbles.
Blimey, Chris. Yeah.
Kids today.
We will hear about it later.
Radio Cycling brings you the latest news in partnership with Saddle Skedaddle, the leader in global road cycling holidays. With nearly 30 years' experience under their belt, the team at Saddle Skedaddle use their local knowledge to craft itineraries that deliver some of the best road cycling experiences in the world. That's my favourite word, itineraries. Sandwiched between the Tour of Flanders and Paris-Roubaix, the Itzulia Basque Country is one of the great stage races on the international calendar. It takes place in front of some of the sport's most passionate fans in a region full of magnificent riding from the Atlantic coast to the high mountains. Among Skedaddle's handful of holiday options in the Basque Country are their two Bilbao Santiago Camino road routes, one a week long, the other extending to 11 days. Now, Pete, you have ridden and travelled a lot in the Basque Country, I know. What keeps you taking you back there?
It just feels very different, Jeremy. It's got a very unique language and culture. It feels like a world apart. It's distinctive. It's very beautiful. The food's to die for. The riding is too. And if you're on a bike in the Basque Country, you're always going to feel at home.
Can I just come in very, very quickly? Me and Pete were at the Itzulia Basque Country maybe 3 years ago. And we stayed in the same hotel. And can you remember what we seen, Pete, all morning? A certain running race.
We did. I can't remember what it's called now, but it's just this extraordinary Basque language running event, relay event, all around the Basque Country that's every 2 years.
When you checked into this hotel, did you use your full names? Christopher Peter Cossens and Christopher Marshall Bell?
Christopher James Marshall Bell. All 28 letters.
Christopher James. You see, you're CJ and I'm JC.
We're meant to do this podcast together.
Trust the experts. Head to skedaddle.com to find your next cycling adventure.
You're listening to Radio Cycling.
Oh, One Cycling, where art thou? So after all that fuss about the UCI, the ASO, the CPA, the AIGCP, and the debate over whether they could all be friends with the PIF, what is now left of the One Cycling dream on the cutting room floor? So as a brief reminder, since we've not touched upon Chris's favourite topic in quite a while, One Cycling is the proposed plan to make cycling more sustainable and profitable for teams and race organisers. As part of the proposals, there would have been a breakaway league in which a team's best riders would have to race against each other throughout the season. But Chris, where are we now?
Enthusiasm seems to have tapered off quite significantly in the last few weeks. People I've been speaking with in the last few days have said that conversations are still happening, but it seems to have stalled. We know that there was a meeting with SRJ Sport Investment, which is the agency representing PIF, which is the Saudi Public Investment Fund, with the key players after Milan San Remo just a few weeks ago. In itself, that's not huge news because meetings have been happening for months and things haven't really advanced too much. One thing worth noting is that Richard Plugger is no longer the AIGCP president following the election of Brent Copeland, which was on March the 15th. That doesn't actually change things too significantly because the AIGCP, it's not technically involved with One Cycling, even though obviously represents all of the men's professional teams. Plugger is still working on One Cycling. It's still his dream. He's still the brainchild of it all. But he has taken a backseat, quite aware of the discontent around himself. The feeling, though, among many is that One Cycling, it's running out of road. And if they don't make significant progress by the Giro, which is starts in 4 weeks, but especially the Tour, it's game over. But you just never know. Jez, what have you heard?
Well, yeah, I've heard much the same, that it's hit the buffers, run out of steam, a busted flush, a damn squib. I do know the following, though. Conversations with PIF were detailed and advanced, and the Saudis were prepared to put in considerable financing. I think it got a lot closer to a deal than many people realise, but there were still major obstacles. For example, the five key teams at the heart of One Cycling were seen as secretive towards fellow teams on exactly what the business model would be, and that in itself fuelled mistrust. Ultimately, eight teams were willing to commit, but they needed a minimum of 10 teams to make it work. ASO's decision also to publicly reiterate its power and rebuff the approach of One Cycling had the desired effect. That power play, directly from Christian Prudhomme, by the way, definitely put the frighteners on. Also, I think a key point was that the timing was off. It's the year of the Paris Olympics, possibly the worst moment to ask ASO how much cash they want for their heritage events. So for all those who think One Cycling was just a drink too many one long lunchtime, it definitely wasn't. If it's accurate that eight teams were willing to go with it and only 10 were needed, that actually shows how close it was to happening. And I still believe that it's inevitably coming down the line at some point.
Just a question for both of you on this. Now, obviously, as we've touched upon before, this is not the first One Cycling idea. There's been a lot in the last 15 years alone. Do you both get the sense that if this does die, if it's going to be wrapped up, do you both get the sense that this might spring up again in the next 2-3 years? Or are we likely to wait another 8 or 10 years for another idea like this to come about?
I think it's interesting with the kind of the mooted reorganisation of the calendar that David Lapartian, the UCI president, is talking about in 2026 or wanting to bring about. I think there's still a big opportunity for it to happen there. I think there's still, you two have been talking to more people kind of closely connected to this, but I still feel that there's a need for some kind of league of this nature to bring about a kind of a more sustainable project for cycling, for the teams essentially, and for a lot of the races, apart from the Tour de France and maybe one or two others that can finance themselves. Cycling needs it, I think, and I think it will rear up again.
I'd agree. I mean, I'm not an advocate for Saudi money at all, as I think everybody knows, but I think it's inevitable that change is needed and that it will come. It's just be what form it comes in. And I think there's also some pivotal power broking to be done at ASO. And I think eventually, ultimately, over the next few years, we will see gradual move towards this being more acceptable and becoming a reality.
I really, really noticed the need for change last weekend watching Flanders. I was watching it with some friends who don't know a great deal about cycling. And they were asking me why Pogacar wasn't at Flanders because he won last year. And I said, oh, you know, well, that's because he's preparing for the Giro and then also the Tour. And they couldn't really get their head around why the best rider in the sport wasn't at one of the biggest races.
And that was one of the first times I've really had someone who enjoys cycling but doesn't understand the model of cycling speak to me about it and say, it doesn't make sense. Like, why aren't these best riders racing against each other? So I think many people are on board with the ideas of one cycling. It just needs that push to make it happen. But as we keep on coming back to all of the time, how do you do it without ASO on board? Is it even possible?
The last thing I'd say about it, and the last, very last thing, is that I think you look at the direction of travel in world sport, where the money is, and look at all the precedents that have already been set. And it just feels to me that it's inevitable that cycling has to get in line if it wants to survive. So I do think Richard Plugger is right, and I think inevitably it will eventually happen. Cycling Weekly takes you to the heart of the cycling scene with the latest news, bike and kit reviews, fitness advice, interviews and inspiring stories from around the world. First published in 1891, Cycling Weekly has been getting people out on their bikes for over 130 years. It's almost time for Paris-Roubaix, so don't miss Cycling Weekly's extensive online and print coverage of the 2024 Hell of the North. To subscribe, go to magazinesdirect.com and search Cycling Weekly. And for breaking news, expert buying advice and much more, go to the Cycling Weekly website at cyclingweekly.com. Now, since the start of the 2024 season, there has been a big elephant in the room, a spectre hanging over the sport. That's the issue of Israel Premier Tech's presence in races and the risk that that poses to the peloton. Ever since the latest conflict in Gaza began in October, there have been mass protests all around the world demanding a ceasefire. Despite its name, Israel Premier Tech is not a state-sponsored nor a state-run team from Israel, but is instead bankrolled by philanthropist Sylvan Adams. Since World Tour racing resumed in Australia in January, protests have been common at most races in which Israel Premier Tech has been present. And in the last few weeks, various teams have informed Radio Cycling that they are fearful about a potential attack on the peloton in the coming months. Chris, you have more on this.
Yeah, first thing to say is protests against the team are not uncommon. I think we've all seen them at the Tour, especially down the years. But it was at the recent Volta a Catalunya where various staff members from various different teams were expressing their concern to me about the risk of peaceful protests turning a little bit violent. And the fear that if there are some attacks that might happen, it might not just be against the Israel team, but it could implicate the whole peloton as well. There was even some press officers who were saying to me that the time has come to actually now educate their riders in what to say when journalists inevitably ask them about Israel's presence in races.
So is your sense that this is a widespread fear now?
Well, when I was at the Volta, yeah, it was. I was thinking, wow, okay, this is a real issue. The whole peloton is on high alert. But since I've got back from the Volta, I've been speaking with a lot of different teams, and they're basically saying they've not even spoken about it. It's not even breached conversation. A lot of teams have dismissed the threat completely. Some have said, you know, there's always protests in the Tour, mostly the peaceful. Why will this be any different? I did definitely see more protests at Catalunya, though. They were peaceful, but there was a lot of Palestinian flags. There was also some Israeli flags. And this is a topic that generates a lot of feeling. And with no sign of the war stopping soon, let alone a ceasefire, the threat of attack will remain. I think it's also worth saying as well that that threat is not just in the World Tour. Security is also now a growing concern at the Paris Olympics this July and August, where obviously some Israeli athletes will be competing. So I think this is really a real key story that we're going to have to follow in the next few months, because you hope nothing is going to happen, but there's genuine fears that something might happen.
Now, last November, Sylvan Adams, the owner of the team, joined us on Radio Cycling. When asked whether the team would make any changes due to security concerns, he was insistent that they wouldn't.
Are you thinking about deploying more security? Have you spoken to the UCI about this and race organisers?
So, again, are we to be intimidated by genocidal terrorists? when ISIS was threatening people around the world, did the world come to a stop? This is the same thing, whether it's Hamas, Hezbollah in the north, ISIS, Al-Qaeda. What are we supposed to do, cower? So no, actually, we're just going to go about our daily business.
You've obviously mentioned the protests, the demonstrations. There is a huge strength of feeling about this conflict. I know we've just touched on this, but I guess my question comes from, I'm a guy in my late 20s as well. Most of your riders are in their late 20s. I'm not sure many young men in their late 20s would feel safe wearing your jersey right now, given what is happening. And I'm not trying to take a side in this conflict. I'm just purely looking at it from a safety aspect. I mean, is it safe to be wearing an Israel Premier Tech jersey out training or in a race as we speak?
I mean, what are you suggesting? That people are going to attack us because we're wearing the name Israel on our jersey? Are you suggesting that, we don't have the right to free speech and to present ourselves in public? Is this what you're asking? And do you think that's okay? Do you think that's okay? You say I'm not taking sides in the conflict. You're right. You can't take sides in the conflict because one side are genocidal terrorists, and the other side is a peace-loving nation that wants to live in peace and prosperity.
That's Sylvain Adams. You can listen back to the full version of that extended interview in our archives. So, Chris, have the team done anything about this yet?
Well, contrary to what Sylvain Adams was telling us, they actually have. They've changed their branding quite considerably. No longer do their vehicles, their bikes, their buses have the word Israel on them. The Star of David still is present, but it's multicoloured and it doesn't really look like the Star of David, to be honest. The team have said, "We continue to race proudly as Israel Premier Tech with the team name and Israel branding on the racing kit as it was in previous years." They added, "The team adopted a number of precautionary measures ahead of the 2024 season. The decision was made to use the IPT monogram comprised of the Star of David and the Premier Tech PT on the team vehicles and other branded elements."
Okay, and what about race organisers? ASO, for example, have become accustomed to dealing with security issues in recent years. It's not something that they haven't had to handle before.
No, of course not. And like we said just a few minutes ago, protests in cycling have always happened. It's just part of cycling. We're speaking with a few race organisers this week. They're telling me that they are in regular contact with their local police services. And so far, the police advice in most countries is not really to change anything at all. You would expect, however, in the big races like the Giro and the Tour, that extra police will be there, will be present. Maybe there will be special arrangements for Israel Premier Tech. We don't know. We can only speculate on that. As for the team officials, they're telling me that they are utterly relying on the organisers being responsible for making the right call. And as we said, it's definitely a situation to watch for sure.
And well, just as a small addendum to that, I remember standing in a start village somewhere towards the end of one tour. I think it was after the terrorist attacks in Nice, and there were police snipers ranged around on rooftops over the start villages. So they are used to having to bring in extra security. Now, we should add that on the road, Israel Premier Tech are having a really good season. They've won 3 World Tour races, are well placed to be promoted back to the World Tour at the end of the 2025 season, and they seem to be moving on from their journeyman tag. But out of all the possible protests that could befall cycling this summer, it's this one, not the ongoing farmer demonstrations, that is most worrying cycling's top officials. Pete, we know that Israel Premier Tech is not run by the Israeli government, but does this point highlight the problem of having nations attached to countries?
Obviously it does, Jeremy. This week, for example, there's been the awful news of aid workers being targeted and killed in missile strikes carried out by the Israel Defence Forces in Gaza. These attacks have caused uproar in political circles and, of course, beyond that as well. Of course, the team and the staff and the riders aren't to blame, but it would be no surprise to see them become the focus of protests, especially at the Grand Tours. And I do expect the riders to be pressed a bit more by the media about the war in Gaza too. One thing I'd add, just to follow up on one thing that Chris said about the increased security around the tour and whatever, and the Olympics. I know they're going to boost security there, and that is specifically in response to the IS, Islamic State, attack on the concert hall in Moscow recently. They've heightened the alert in France, as they have in other countries in Europe. So it's not particularly to do with what's going on in Gaza and Israel, but to do with what happened in Moscow.
So listeners last week would have heard New Zealander George Bennett expressing his wish for the cycling season to start 6 weeks later. Nobody gives a shit about January, George.
So we're going to have Christmas at home, everyone. No one cares about Christmas, January. No one gives a shit. It's January, mate.
In the latest edition of Ways to Make Cycling Better, it's the turn of young British pro Harrison Wood, who rides for Cofidis.
Harrison Wood, Team Cofidis, and I'd make cycling better, yeah, by maybe trying to find a way of making races a bit more of a, I guess, like a level playing field in terms of the level of the race. So having point ones and point pros and world tour races changed a bit depending on the teams rather than actually the race, the organisation and what they choose, you know, what the UCI choose. Because sometimes you have races where there's full of world tour teams and it's only a point pro, and sometimes you're full of just continental and pro continental teams and it's a point pro as well, you know. It's to maybe balance out that that system a little bit.
Now, for those unaware, 1.1s and 1.2s are the classification of lower tier UCI races. Pete, Chris, is Harrison right? Are some races inaccurately classified?
I think one thing I'd say, just again to come back to one thing that Chris said earlier about people not understanding what the kind of what the theme is in running through cycling, it's really difficult to understand what all these different races are unless you're kind of really clued in to the sport in a big way. And I think it does need simplifying. It does need to be made easier so that people can understand what the kind of the flow through the calendar is in terms of the level at different or what the different levels of competition are.
The example that Harrison gave me was that the French Cup races, which are these lower tier races, they should be ridden by the third tier teams. But sometimes you have UAE and AG2R and FDJ turning up fighting against guys who are amateurs. And it's like, you don't get that in football. You don't get Man United and Liverpool playing most weekend against Hartlepool United, do you? If only.
That just does my head in, if I'm honest. I mean, the whole thing, I'm totally on board with what he's saying. And I mean, you know, come up with a better name rather than 1.1 and 1.2. That's just like, it's archaic, isn't it? And it's also deliberately obtuse. Yeah, it's just deliberately obtuse, isn't it? I mean, why not just call it something that is more easily understood? French Cup's a good name for a series of races, I think. But maybe you just have some footnote that says these are the teams that are entitled to race in French Cup races. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you just need, I don't know, something like football maybe, where you just have, like, I don't know, Premier Race, Division 1, Division 2, and everybody can instantly understand what's going on, whether their riders are actually competing in the things or fans trying to guess what kind of standard of racing they're watching.
It makes me want one cycling even more. Anyway, before we go, what's the answer to Pete's puzzle? We need a jingle again. We need the jingle there for the answer.
The answer, and Chris, I'm really impressed. You were only 2 kilometres out, 22 kilometres. There were 22 really? Kilometres of Pave in 1964. And what I would say about that is we're kind of up to a point now where there are almost 60 kilometres of Pave in the race. But back in the 1960s, in the departments in the north of France where the race takes place, they were really keen on ripping up the cobbles. They just thought Paris-Roubaix was a throwback that they didn't want to be associated with. They wanted to be seen as a modern, kind of forward-looking part region of France. And so local mayors just spent all their time kind of ripping out these cobbles or tarmacking them over. And
they did, didn't they? I remember they did tarmac them over, yeah.
Yeah, and it almost forced Paris-Roubaix into becoming essentially another
Paris-Tours.
I don't know, another long classic, like Paris-Tours or Paris-Brussels, which now doesn't even exist. Just a long race that really wasn't going to have any foothold in the calendar for very long. And it's quite astonishing to think of that.
That's not even a proper Paris-Roubaix, is it? 22 kilometres. That's not Paris-Roubaix. Yeah, that's not the hell of the north.
Even I could ride that.
That's the kind of slightly uncomfortable race in the north. It's not the hell of the north. Anyway, that's it for this show. Many thanks to all our contributors and to you all for listening too. We will be back next week. See you next time.
Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.